Our fourth argued case this morning is GSC Construction Incorporated versus Secretary of the Army, 2021-1803. Mr. Kernan.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court. Thank you for your time this morning. I'm here on behalf of GSC Construction Incorporated. I'm Patrick Kernan. Before the Court today is a case dealing with government trying to avoid responsibility for a faulty solicitation and confusion over uniform facility criteria on a small hub zone business and not take any responsibility or give any delay to that contractor. That contractor was a successful contractor on our project. On this small SSA warehouse, they were basically put out of business because of the conduct. And the errors.
Just to clarify, it's late in the week for me. Are you talking about Harper, or are you talking about some of your subcontractors?
No, I'm talking about GSC Construction, my client.
No, but when you said that somebody else, you were casting the blame on somebody else or the responsibility for the problems on someone else.
Yes, Your Honor, I was casting the blame on the government in this case and on the four particular issues before the court. And I plan to address four issues before the court. The first, as set out in our briefs, is the excavation work. The second is the cold form steel work. The third is the issue of waiver within this contract. And fourth, the issue of good faith and fair dealing with respect to funding on this contract.
So is your argument, sir, this is Judge Prowse, is your argument that it was not your responsibility to do this excavation work?
Yes, Your Honor, and GSC interpreted this solicitation reasonably in our opinion and in GSC's opinion when they're submitting the bid. Their review of the bid was consistent with the solicitation specifications. And if you look at the specifications themselves, their interpretation is reasonable, and the board's conclusion or the engineer's conclusion is not reasonable. If you look at the solicitation, it has a complete specifications for the infrastructure contractor. The infrastructure contractor was responsible for excavation and building these sites. As a bidding contractor, GSC was given those specifications in order to form its bid. When reviewing those specifications, if you look at paragraph 3.2.1 in appendix 4.3.2.2, it states specifically that the infrastructure or TEMF contractor, which was Harper, would dig down 8 feet and insert an earth fill. So as a contractor bidding on this contract, I need to know what kind of site I'm going to be given by the government.
Is that appendix part of the contract? I thought there was some kind of header that said for information only, not part of the contract.
It was included in the contract, but it did say for information only. And to a reasonable contractor, that would mean...
Did it also say not part of the contract?
It means that work is not part of its scope, but it informs, in the solicitation set, it should inform the bid of the contractor.
What about the other provisions that are right in the contract itself that talk about things like the contractor is responsible for any additional fill or cut in order to meet the required minimum or maximum finished floor, and any specific site preparation required to accommodate the foundation design prepared or proposed by the contractor, and the contractor shall accept the site as is and be solely responsible for all final site preparation, including any excavation if necessary, placement of select fill if necessary, and any testing required to accommodate the proposed foundation. And as I understand it, the foundation that GSC selected was the waffle mat foundation. And so I guess what's wrong with reading these provisions is an understanding that GSC's obligation, among other things, was to remove and replace any undesirable fill and replace it with the needed kind of fill that would accommodate the waffle mat foundation you chose.
So the GSC's interpretation, and it's a reasonable interpretation, is that those specifications and drawing notes that you're dealing with talk about site as was required in the infrastructure contract, that they did need to do the finishing work on that site, but the huge excavation that was not contemplated in the contract.
Well, I mean, there's another place where the contract says the government will provide general site preparation and grading, right, including brush clearing, removal of rocks, and rough grading. And that was Harper's responsibility, as I understand it. But rough grading, whatever that is a much more limited type of earthwork than the kinds of excavation and placement of new select fill that is specifically assigned as being GSC's role in the contract.
The infrastructure contractor itself tells us what the building site grading involves, and it specifically says it's excavation 8 feet down and earth fill into that foundation. So as a reasonable contractor, I'm doing that, I'm going to get a site where that's already been done. And that's informed the reason that GSC bid the Wapomet Foundation. They knew that work in earth fill had already been done, so it made sense to propose the Wapomet Foundation. There was a cap on funding on this contract, and if you see, they bid date right to the cap. Yet they want them to bring in equipment and do an excavation on the equipment. And it really doesn't make sense when you think about it. If you look at Harper had 120 days to excavate this limited grading, allegedly, in the contract. And then after they had done this grading in the contract, the reasonable interpretation, the government would argue, is that GSC was to come in and dig right, dig the whole thing up and then put a dirt fill in there after Harper had done all this grading. And the government and the board's own opinion indicates that it's not reasonable because what was an unforeseen condition on the project, the government, the board said it was reasonable for the government to use Harper because they had equipment on site and they had experience with these conditions. You know, in that instance, it was appropriate and reasonable to use Harper, but for the excavation of building sites, which is improving their contract, the government seeks to force that on GSC. With respect to the cold-form steel issue, the issue here is that we have uniform facility criteria. These criteria are sensitive information for official use only. You can see that marked. There was a dispute in the case below. They had to have a motion to compel in order to get those UFC standards. And UFC developed their criteria. They made a mistake with respect to the initial submission using the 2012 criteria. But the government did not assist them or correct them in applying the standards for 7 months.
Isn't this the issue where GSC actually asked the Army Corps, which standard do we use, 2007 or 2012? And the Army Corps correctly said, use 2007. And then for whatever reason, GSC started filling out all the forms applying the 2012 standard. Is that right?
Yes, the initial submission did in a form manner, but the government is responsible for ensuring standards are applied, especially these.
But the contract, doesn't the contract have a provision in it that specifically says that it's GSC's obligation to make sure that all the forms and designs and specifications are filled out correctly and accurately?
Government cited Section 1.7, it can be done as responsible for the adequacy of the design, and Section 1.9, having their key personnel work closely with the designer. But that doesn't absolve the government from responsibility to apply these standards properly. The government has an inherent authority to apply the standards. You can't foist the whole responsibility on the small business hub zone contractor. For 7 months, they couldn't assist them and figuring out the standard, and it's not that straightforward. We're talking about, was this building within the perimeter? You can't have access to these documents because they're sensitive. They're for official use only. So if you look at the emails, they had to dig and dig to get this information. They're refusing to provide the information to GSC. So it's not as simple as, 27 versus 2012. It became more complicated because of the obfuscation of the government.
What about the FAR provision that says you know, if the contractor makes a mistake in filling out the forms that, and the government doesn't identify it in a timely way, that mistake is still going to be, that lays at the feet of the contractor, not the government.
With respect to that FAR provision, there is mutual responsibility in informing a remedy that the board and the government foist all responsibility on the contractor. This is basically, at the best case scenario, is a mutual mistake. When there's a mutual mistake, the court fashions a remedy that accounts for both parties, both their mistakes, not foist all the responsibility, 7 months of delay on the contract. With respect to the third issue, waiver issue, the government waited 21 days after the first completion date, February 3rd, and did not preserve the rights at that time. GSC submitted a detailed request in response to the show cause, laying out different pieces of delay in the contract. And the critical error in the government analysis and in the court's decision is that they don't account for any of the time for weather delays. They don't account for any of the time for the obvious unforeseen condition. They gave Harper modification to account for the unforeseen condition. They didn't give the GSC any time for that. And then the third thing was a delayed start date. So the government seeks to hang on to that February 3rd date, but it's, undisputed that February 3rd date is not relevant, is not applicable anymore because of undisputed delay that was never granted in GSC in this case. So,
are you saying that the contracting officer never reserved the rights to terminate for default?
They did not reserve for 21 days, and they did not reestablish a completion date for that GSC could build for. They 21 days after the completion date, they then came forward and said we're reserving our rights. But they never at all addressed the undisputed delay that GSC was entitled to with respect to weather delays. It was 34 days with respect to the delay start date. It was 20 days with respect to the unforeseen condition. It was at least 24 days. So you can't stick with a February 3rd date that is completely no longer relevant unless you account for those delays and establish a new date.
Counsel, you're well into your rebuttal time. You can continue, or we'll save it for you.
I'll conclude here, and I'll enjoy the rest of my time. For those reasons, the court would ask you to reverse the decision of the board, as it was arbitrary and capricious and did not account for the faulty specifications and mutual mistake on the part of the government and the contractor, and allow the HUBZO small business to continue to perform exceptional services. Thank you.
We will save the rest of your time. Ms. Akers.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. This appeal is about GSC raising a number of undeveloped and unsupported arguments challenging the Board's factual conclusions, but under the guise of legal arguments. GSC has failed to establish any legal error in the Board's determination here, and therefore the Court should affirm. I'll go first towards the argument raised here regarding the excavation, which was actually appealed as a prior material breach argument. As we explained in our brief, GSC did not raise a prior material breach argument below, and so therefore it can't establish the Board erred by failing to consider this in sustaining the termination for default.
Can I just ask you a general question? Your friend pointed us to a portion of the appendix, which Judge Chen obviously correctly pointed out was not part of the contract, and it says this is for information only. Is there no legal import to documents such as this that purport to explain or give guidance, but they don't, you can't rely on them at the end of the day? Is that the notion about this?
Correct, Your Honor. And to make one clarification, the contract does say not in contract, and it also says for information only. I think there's a question earlier on that. So the reason that that was given is because there are two contractors working on the site, and as the government explained, some of their work overlapped. So it's, of course, helpful for the government to provide part of the other solicitation or specifications to both contractors so that they know whose responsibility is divvied. But there's no legal import for GCS on the solicitation for another contractor. And in fact, GSC's argument, it's a little confusing. It essentially argues that everything in that appendix withdraws work from its own solicitation. So GSC would have to look at its solicitation or its scope of work and say, these are all of our items, and then go through that attachment and
subtract.
But it is
fair, just generally, maybe not in this case, for one to compare the two to clarify where my responsibilities end and yours begin, right?
Sure,
that's
Your
the
Honor.
Point of them getting it, right?
Correct. But the argument that GSC makes here is that it believes that certain items of work were in that appendix, and that the board erred by failing to identify that. But GSC actually raises no contractual interpretation or provides no analysis as to how that is true. Appendix pages 24 to 27, the board goes through four reasons why this work was within GSC's scope of work. It also addresses GSC's four arguments as to why it wasn't, and it explains and analyzes why the contract doesn't support GSC's interpretation. Now on appeal, GSC is arguing, well, that's not right, but it doesn't provide any contractual interpretation. It doesn't go so far as to even cite the contractual language and explain why the board's interpretation was wrong. So not only is there no prior material breach because it wasn't raised below, there's no identification of a legal error here on behalf of the board.
Finish your thought.
I was just going to make one other point. Even if the board or if the court were to find for GCS on this one excusable delay, that's not enough for GSC to overturn the default termination. There were five delays that GSC asserted were contributing to its delayed performance, and it would have had to show that at least three of those delays were excusable to overturn the termination for default. So by failing to appeal the other delays, it's really of no regard whether the board was right on this singular one or not.
Did the board make that finding about adding up all the different amounts of delay from different
It
issues?
Did, Your Honor. It did. And it said that it would have to at least find three, and then it provided a footnote and said it could be these three or it could be these other two. And we cited that in our brief. It wasn't challenged by GSC. And in fact, the board gave deference to GSC's expert and used its expert dates and the delay that it calculated to make that determination. So really, all inferences are in favor of GSC on those delays.
I just want to ask you about generally about this DeVito doctrine. I may have encountered it, but I have no recollection of that now. That's a court of claims case. Has our court ever, or was that our predecessor court of claims?
Primarily your predecessor court, although I have found four Federal Circuit cases addressing DeVito.
So when you say it's been, well, when the suggestion is that it's been watered down or cabined or whatever, by us?
No, Your Honor. No, the DeVito doctrine has been applied very strictly, and like we explained in our brief, hardly ever in construction cases. This court has applied it. I think the best case is the McDonald case that we cited, I believe on page 49 of our brief, and that was not in a construction case. It's very difficult for this court or the boards or the lower courts to find that DeVito applies in construction cases because the whole point of DeVito is that there's reasonable reliance to the contractor's detriment on the government's failure to terminate within a reasonable amount of time. And in construction cases where we have a contractor who is being paid monthly on progress payments for all of the work that it's completed, and that's under the FAR, there's no detrimental reliance because the contractor is actually paid for their work on a monthly basis. So it'd be difficult for a contractor to say, I had no idea you were going to terminate me. I continued to expend resources and time and effort, and now I'm out all of this money because you terminated me before I could generate a work product. In the construction industry, it's different. Every month, they submit a bill and say a progress payment. They say, this is exactly what we performed, what work we performed, and the government pays. And there are provisions in construction contracts, like there are here, where even if the government terminates the contractor is still paid for the work that was performed. So there's no detrimental reliance, like is the case in a service contract, for example, or the supply and research contract, like the McDonnell case we cited. And so the applicability of that doctrine here is very limited. And even if the court were to apply it here, there are two factors, two elements, neither of which GSC has even attempted to meet. First, it has to show that the government waited an unreasonable amount of time after the contract completion date, and there were circumstances that indicated forbearance. Here, the board made a determination that 135 days after the contract completion date, the date of termination, that was a reasonable period of time. And if we compare 135 days time to the other cases that are cited by GSC, there's really no comparison. The other cases where the board has found that there was an unreasonable amount of time are 2 years, 13 months later. And in this case also, there were no circumstances that indicated forbearance because the government provided notice three times that it was considering termination and that it did not waive any of its contractual rights. Now, GSC contends that the government waited until after the termination, or excuse me, after the contract completion date to make this assertion, but that's just not true. There was a January show cause notice that was submitted, which is before the contract completion date, that said, we're considering terminating you. This is the contract completion date. You are behind. We waive none of our contractual rights, and we do not condone any delinquency. So several weeks before the contract completion date, the government indicated that. Then a couple weeks after the contract completion date had passed, the government submitted a letter in February to GSC and again said, we don't waive our rights, we don't condone this delinquency, but we'll give you an opportunity to try and finish the contract. Then again, 1 month later, the government issued its second show cause notice and stated all of those things again. So there were no circumstances here that indicate forbearance. None of the cases that GSC has cited have the government sending numerous letters to the contractor and then the board finding that there was an application of the DeVito Doctrine. So it's just simply not applicable on the facts. And then the second element of DeVito, which we've already discussed, is the reasonable reliance to the contractor's detriment. Here, GSC was paid for its work. There was no detrimental reliance at all. The liquidated damages provision was in the contract. That's something that the board has often considered. So even if this court were to apply DeVito here, which we don't think it's appropriate, neither of the elements are met, and GSC has not even attempted to establish either of those elements in its brief. And then just briefly, Your Honors, there are a few other issues. There's the issue of the alleged breach of good faith and fair dealing that is raised here. Again, this is incredibly underdeveloped in the brief by GSC. There's essentially no facts. There's no legal analysis. It just says that the government breached this good faith and fair dealing obligation. There's nothing to support that, and there's been no error identified from the board's decision. And then lastly, there was some discussion about subcontractors and the amount to which they contributed to the delay in the opening brief, and there was no error identified there either. And then finally,
I guess the argument must have been that the government was financially squeezing GSC, which made it hard for GSC to work with its subcontractors.
That does seem to be the contention on appeal, Your Honor. There's nothing cited to that in the record, and that's just another example that GSC is really actually challenging the factual determinations that the board made below. The board judge, in the concurring opinion, went to great lengths to explain all of the issues that the contractors had that contributed to the delay, but that was never tied to the government's fault. And so that's really just a factual challenge that hasn't really even been properly challenged. And the last thing I'll say is that counsel opened here today saying that there were defective specifications. There are some notes throughout its brief referring to defective specifications, but no defective specification claim has actually been raised in this appeal or below, and so we ask that the court doesn't need to address that either.
Getting back to earthwork, there's a provision in the contract somewhere that says something like within 120 days, Harper shall provide a complete pad site to GSC. What does the contract mean by a complete pad site?
I believe, Your Honor,
one argument could be that it's all earthwork has been completed.
And that's certainly GSC's argument. The board did address that, I believe, on page 25 of the appendix, and let's look at the contract as a whole. If the contract says in numerous parts that GSC is responsible for removal and replacement of the fill, and then GSC is arguing that that provision Your Honor cites includes the fill, those two things seem to conflict because the fill is addressed in other parts of the contract. That's an argument that GSC seems to make here today, an argument, but it is not made in its brief and was not part of its arguments really below.
So what does the contract mean when it says a complete pad site?
I believe, Your Honor, that it refers to the actual structure and not the underneath the replacement and the removal of the fill underneath. There are no further questions. We ask that the court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Kernan has a couple of minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. I wanted to address 3 points. First, with respect to the issue of not raising enough issues to cover the delay, if you review the case that the board cited when it talks about the amount of time you need to get to the delay, it was the Empire Energy case. And the Empire Energy case talked about not reasonably able to finish the contract. It didn't say you need a day-for-day comparison between the what the delay was versus what you're asking for. So as long as if you grant one of the delays, and if you, as we said in our brief, if you grant the excusable delay for the foundation, the sub-base, or you grant the delay, and you grant the delay for cold form steel, it basically gets you to the final date. No reason will assume that they would be able to perform within that period of time, but in accordance with the Empire Energy Management case. With respect to the good faith and fair dealing, Your Honor, you are correct that our position is the government didn't fulfill their obligations to act with good faith and fair dealing because they did squeeze the contractor. And there are references in our brief. One, they did not pay a pay application number 6, that's for site storage. And they also, and GSC contributed about $2 million from its own pocket to get these subcontractors moving with respect to that. And in our opinion, that breaches the obligation for good faith and fair dealing. With respect to the foundation, just one final point on that. The government seeks to avoid the interpretation of their own contract on the contractor. This is a termination for default. The burden is on the government to establish that the termination was proper. You don't shift and figure out our contract onto the contractor. This is a hub zone small business. They acted appropriately based on the specifications they were provided. We'd ask this court respectfully over return of decision of the board with respect to the termination for default.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate the arguments of both counsel, and the case is submitted. That concludes our arguments for today.